Good morning, everyone. Mike DiTillo along with Herb Tyler. It's our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. No, we're not at Acme. We'll be there this afternoon, 4 to 6. Herb and I will be there to talk post-game, LSU, South Carolina. But this is our pregame show, and we want to thank Gulf Coast Bank and Trust for sponsoring our pregame show as we lead up to 11 straight hours of Tiger Talk, because the Tigers will kick it off at 11 a.m. this morning. Chris Blair, along with Jacob Hester, will give you the call. And then for 90 minutes, they do post-game. And then for 2 hours, Herb and I do post-game. So we'll give you all that wall-to-wall coverage right here on the Big 870 WWL and free on the Odyssey app. We'll find out a lot about both teams today with LSU with a almost a lackluster performance last week against Nicholls State. And that's take nothing away from the Colonels. They came to play. And no matter what Brian Kelly wants to say, they got out physical up front. They got pushed around, especially on the defensive side, the football, and couldn't run the football again. So, Herb, good morning. Glad to talk to you again, and we'll see each other this afternoon at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge, for our map construction presented Purple and Gold Point After Show. How concerned are you that this football team, after two games, have not shown a lot of physicality in the run game? They haven't been able to run the football with four of the five starting offensive linemen for a year ago back.
Man, good morning, Mike. It's, you know, you go back to the last week against Nicholls, and, you know, there was a team that came out and looked like they were eager to play, looked like they were really into the game, looked like they were way more physical than the other team very early on and throughout the game, and that was Nicholls State. And it was really weird to see. And, you know, the Tigers ended up winning 44-21 just because they just overmatched Nicholls. But we didn't – it seems, you know, the fiery speech that Coach Kelly gave after the USC game didn't seem to translate into this Nicholls game. And it is concerning to see – our offensive line not really pushing people around and opening up holes. And I was talking to a good friend of mine this week about it, and we just can't put a finger on it. It has to be scheme. It can't be – at the end of the day, we can't believe it's just the fact that the guys don't have the ability to do so. It's got to be the scheme. It's got to be, you know, I guess the either overthinking it, or the scheme just doesn't call for, you know, aggressive – you know, blocking to get people out of the way. And we don't know. Maybe it's some type of zone that the guys are not understanding how to really do. Physically, you know, when you're running zone run plays, you have to all be in sync and in the same light, if you will, and dance in the same steps. But, you know, it's concerning, and they have to change that. The leading rusher for LSU last week was Caleb Jackson with 8 carries for 28 yards, and you hardly ever saw him in the game, right?
Yeah, I mean, he was almost a non-factor like he was in week one. And we thought Caleb behind this offensive line that he would sort of chew people up. Herbert looks different, but I'll be honest with you. I think Garrett Nussmeier is carrying the same two buckets of heavy water that Jaden Daniels did a year ago. It's different because both of them are different style quarterbacks. But this team, if it's going anywhere, it's riding on the back of Garrett Nussmeier. And, again, we saw Kyron Lacy show up big against the Colonels. Hopefully today it looks as though Kyle Parker will return to the lineup after suffering an elbow injury against USC. And Chris Hilton will miss his third straight game. So you need Kyle Parker in the lineup, but I think Garrett, those two buckets are still full for him, and he's still going to have to carry it for this team to get a W today.
Yeah, I'm at home in my little Yorkie. Miss Zoe, she's barking. She wants to get something in, too. She's like, yeah, Garrett Nussmeier is just the man. But, you know, Garrett went 27-37 for 302 and 6 touchdowns, and it looked very pedestrian, but he is the guy that's making it happen, right? He played great against USC. I thought he played good enough to win the game. I don't think he had a lot of help, if that makes sense. And then you turn around and you look at the Nicholls State game, and he was efficient. He did what he was supposed to do. He was in the game much longer than they anticipated because he didn't have much help. Again, the guys are playing hard. They're just not physical, and it just seems like you said, Garrett is carrying the same bucket of water. It just looks very different than what Jaden Daniels did last year. And so people, you know, when you start looking at the games and start understanding who LSU football is, I think we're all in the same light of thinking that LSU football is a combination of 2019 and 2023. And I think that's kind of a little bit unfair to the team because they're not the same team. They definitely don't have the same animals and dogs on the team that they do that's in 2019. And then in 2023, it was really a one-man show, if that makes sense at all, with the additions of Neighbors and Brian Thomas Jr., of course, and a growing or developing offensive line. The run game was still a little bit, a lot suspect, if that makes sense. We haven't really truly under Coach Kelly yet really become a dominant, push people around and run the football. You know, it's just not been there. So, you know, with all the injuries and people that are going to be out this week, LSU's going to be in for a tough task at South Carolina because that's a beautiful stadium. It's a great crowd, and it's a hard place to play. And the coach Beamer is one of the better coaches in the country. So, and it's going to be a really tough task today. And it's at 11 a.m., so we'll see what that looks like.
Yeah, and it's game day in South Carolina, too. So
game day, yes.
Yeah, so that's going to rev them up even more. You know, Bobby and I were talking about this during the week that I think from the start with Brian Kelly, it's been the biggest surprise because if you watched him coach places, even before Notre Dame, he was a guy that really relied heavily on the run. And the big offensive line at Notre Dame, they sort of pushed people around. It was their physicality. They had a ton of first-round pick offensive linemen. LSU's got a couple guys up front there now, and the two tackles in Emory Jones and Will Campbell that you know are kind of built along the same lines of what he had at Notre Dame. But it's their inability to run the football when they need to and had to. Last week, you saw Nicholls, you know, they had some holes. And I'm not trying to take nothing against Colin Guggenheim. So, Colin, if you're listening, no. God bless you.
Yeah.
You know, and I said this before. Colin, put that game, that's in the grandpa notebook. Okay, when you're going to become an old pops like me, you'll be able to tell your grandkids, man, LSU can talk all that smack, and they might have been better than us, but they wasn't better than me that day. And that long run, man, I was just hoping he could survive. We had a running joke with him and I that I did a couple interviews with him in the offseason, and he always says, man, Mr. Mike, I always hear you talk about that second number. And, you know, last year my second number, you know, he didn't want to say it, but I knew it was in the high fours. And he's down to 222, and he beat him. He got into the end zone, and he beat the tackle. But you saw Nicholls run the football right at them and run inside on LSU. And now, and we'll talk about this in our next segment about the loss of Jacoby and Guillory, but that to me has been the huge surprise, that LSU has not been able to run the football when they need to and have to under Brian Kelly. And I'm surprised at that. I really am.
Well, I think everybody is. One of the reasons why I wanted Brian Kelly to come to LSU was because of that. I thought that he could really develop the interior lines on both sides of the football, as well as bring in those, you know, larger tight ends that would really make impacts throughout the game, and then bring a sense of competition, a sense of pride, and a sense of physicality that I thought that he had brought other places, along with a little bit of nuance and creativity on the offensive side, right? And then you would also see him. He would also have at least two or three really physical yet athletic linebackers that could play really well. Now, the safeties was good. They were kind of stiff and things of that nature, but that's okay. But the offensive line and defensive line were his real, I guess it was, especially the offensive line, was really his forte. And I was so excited about that because I was thinking, man, we're going to have, you know, just trees up front, and they're going to be huge, and they're going to just push people around, and they're going to be able to pass protect with the best of them, and it's going to be awesome, but we just have not seen it yet. And I don't know if it's the dancing and the grinding on the guy in the recruiting video or if it's just a different era in college football that maybe he thinks he's tweaking his recruiting style to get a certain type of player that's developing something different in college football. I don't know. I can only assume that. So, but we're hoping that the group that he has now can turn a corner a little bit along with the coaching staff to be able to actually help these guys out scheme-wise to where they can, you know, at least garner at least 100 yards, 110 yards a game, right? So that's what I'm looking for.
When we come back, we'll talk about the development of Kyren Lacy at wide receiver as a number one, because it's different. Man, listen, when you got Brian Thomas Jr. and Malik Nabers and you lining up with them, you never going to see no double coverage or bracket coverage, never. You know, you one-on-one. It's a little different this year, but, boy, Kyren has really stepped up his game. And also, too, we'll talk about the loss of the big man in the middle, Jacobian Guillory. Man, that's tough to see. Jacobian was so anxious to play this year and make an impact in the middle as kind of that big nose guard guy to stop the run, and then he goes down with an Achilles injury. So we'll talk about the development of Kyren and also the loss of Jacobian Guillory right after this break here. And Mike DeTillo along with Herb Tyler on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. We'll be back with a lot more Tiger Talk right after this break. Good morning again, and welcome back to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTillo along with Herb Tyler, and we will return to, as the commercial said, to our post-game show. It'll be at 4 o'clock this afternoon from Acme Oyster House, and we want to thank MAP Construction for being our presenting sponsor. Herbert talked a little bit about it, but the development of Kyren Lacy, and I know this offseason before fall camp, I talked to him, and he's like, I'm ready. He said, I'm ready to be the guy. And I said, well, you just be ready to get double coverage. And he just started to laugh. He said, I get it. He said, because I saw it, you know, I saw it for 2 years with Malik and how teams were basically trying to stop him. And I think the first 2 weeks, if there was any question about who your number one guy is, yeah, no question anymore, it's Kyren. When they need something, they go to Kyren Lacy.
Yeah, so you go back to last year, right, and you remember Kyren having a few, what I like to call significant drops throughout the season. I just remember Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. catching any and everything that you can think of, and Kyren was going to be that number three guy that everybody would say, okay, he's going to be the number one going into the season this year in 2024. And I just remember one game, I forget who they were playing, but he dropped the ball, and he was so upset, and I could see the agony and the pain.
Texas A&M.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, because he talked to me about it. He said, it still bothers me today. I said, man, shrug that off. You know, you got to move on with it. But he remembered that drop.
Yeah, and I remember it because I know what it felt like to feel like you've let your team down and on one play, basically. But here's the thing. You turn around and you look at what he's done this the start of this season, and he may not be over it as far as it may still be in his head, but he's forgotten about it, and he's turned the switch on, and he's catching any and everything. Now, it doesn't look the same as, you know, Malik Nabers or Brian Thomas Jr., and also, you know, it doesn't look like Jordan Jefferson or any of those guys either as well as who we think it a typical LSU receiver should look like. But he looks daggone good, I'm going to tell you that right now. You know, and this season right now, he's got 12 catches, 159 yards, with four touchdowns. He is the guy. He's the guy that Gus Nussmeier looks for every, you know, when it's time to look for him. Now, I will say this, though. Against USC, he kind of went non-existent, and I don't think it was because of him. And I don't think it was because of Nussmeier. I just think it was scheme. After the first quarter, they didn't try to get the ball to him enough, in my opinion. But to get back to who he is today, he is definitely the number one guy. And he's going to need some help from one of those other young pups that's coming up to be able to help with just taking the eyes completely off of him. I think Aaron Anderson is doing a great job of playing a role that he's playing. He's really coming to his own. I think Chris Hilton, whenever he gets an opportunity to really play, get on the field, I think it's going to be crazy. Xavier Thomas is a person who is the team is really looking forward to kind of add a little spark and be a little change of pace guy, if you will. And he's doing a phenomenal job as well. And we got to get the tight ends involved to help out Kyron Lacy in order so he can really do what he does. But at the end of the day, if they need a play, just throw the ball to him. He's going to come down with it. And that's what I've seen over the course of the past two games. So I'm really excited about Kyron's play.
Oh, yeah, so am I. And, man, I remember watching him, you know, at Thibodaux High School as a basketball player. If he got coin out there and he said, let's play a pickup game, you better put that money back in your pocket because he can flat out play. He's really, really good. I think the disappointment was, and we talked about it last week, Brian Kelly brought it up twice in the press conference about he wanted to see more of Shelton Sampson. And yet you saw him make mistakes on the field. And if you could read Brian Kelly's lips real good on that, hey, do you want to play or not? You tell me, do you want to play or not? And that's just mental mistakes that Sampson's making out on the field.
You know, that when it comes to that, I don't know the kid, and I think that I just remember when I was in it and doing it and all those things, the mental mistakes was really because of trying to overcomplicate what the situation is, right?
It's just
football. It's just running ins and outs and stops and goes, you know, basically in slants, right? It's just how do you get there and then when do you need to be there, right? And where are you coming from? So sometimes you just got to simplify it for them. Hey, Shelton, get at the X and just run a go route. That's it. Just run a go and throw it to him. That's it. You know, we don't need it. It don't need to be motion. It doesn't need to be X, you know, 35 slant cross D. Jump over your mama. It don't need to be all of that, right? It just needs to be, hey, Shelton, get at the X and run a go route, run a post, run a comeback, or run a simple out route, whatever it is, right? And how about we put it, make it as simple as possible for him if the scheme is, you know, too complicated for him. And it may be right now just because he's young, or maybe he's in a different headspace. But I do know this. If he can't be in the right place at the right time, on the field, he's not going to play. So Coach Kelly said it as best as anybody could. Do you want to play?
The other thing, too, is in South Carolina, and they got a dynamic duo that can come off the edge. And, man, they caused all kind of problems for Kentucky. But if you watch the game film on that, they had receivers for Kentucky that were open. The problem was they couldn't get it to him because the two guys were coming off the edge so much. Now you go up against LSU, and the one thing that has played well this year has been pass protection. And we talked about this in Sports Talk. You can see Garrett Nussmeier back there. There's not a lot of people around him. They doing a really good job in pass protection. It's just that they can't run block real well. If they can neutralize the two edge guys, I think you're going to have a shot to really put up some pretty big numbers against the Wildcats throwing the football. Now, I don't know if they can run it, but I do know one thing, and watching that game film, man, those corners were in the, they were in the reverse position. It looked good because the two edge guys seemed to be in the backfield more than the halfback for Kentucky last week. So, I would expect another big game from Garrett Nussmeier today.
Yeah, so, you know, you go to South Carolina and you look at their edge rushers, Dylan Stewart, and Kyle Kinnaird, those guys are really good. This year they each have over 2.5 sacks. So Stewart has 2.5, and Kinnaird has 3.5. Those guys are doing what they're supposed to do. They're getting to the quarterback, and that puts a strain on the back end of your defense, safeties, and cornerbacks. It makes it easier for them. They're like, okay, they're going to get in the backfield, they're going to make a sack, or they're going to really interrupt the passer, and it'll make it easier for the DBs to make a play. Well, here's the thing, the kicker with LSU. You're going up against two of the best offensive tackles in the country. And so this is going to be a really great test for those two guys. We're going to see exactly who they are and what they're made of. I know they're tough as nails, and I know they're competitive, and I know they talk a lot of trash. So it's going to be fun to watch those that game inside the game, or the battle inside the game on those two edges, and see how that looks. Now, when we're going to see if they can handle any kind of stunts or anything like that South Carolina may bring to them, to try to alleviate trying to get past those two outstanding bookends on each side as far as the two tackles are concerned. So that's going to be interesting to see. And it's also going to be interesting to see how do you combat a good rushing defense, right? Screen plays, you know, letting them come in and get past everybody, and then dumping the ball over their head and gaining some big-time yards. So we'll see what kind of scheme the offensive coaches come up with and game plan this week that's going to combat that and help that offensive line, as well as help Nussmeier not stand in the face of just guys that are ready to tee off on them. So it's going to be interesting to see, and it's going to be fun to watch.
You know, one of the things in talking to Pat Swilling, we've had him on Sports Talk so many times, and Pat said the worst thing, man, I love to rush the quarterback so much, but the thing that slowed me down, they run the football right at me.
Right at him, yep.
Okay, mm-hmm. And that takes a little bit of your aggression to get up the field out of the window, because you're so focused on trying to be a pass rusher, and then they get physical with you, then you're not quite as aggressive coming off the snap. The next snap when they might throw the football. So that slows down a pass rusher more than anything when they run right at you. Herb, hang tight. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. It'll be our Inside the Tiger Den segment brought to you by Go Tax Resolution. We'll have on with us Jeff Palermo from Louisiana Radio Network, breaking down the Tigers South Carolina game, and you can hear it right here live on the Big 870 WWL at 8:11 a.m. We'll be back with more of our pregame coverage of the Tigers right after this break. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTellier along with Herb Tyler. And now it's time for our Inside the Tiger Den segment, brought to you by Go Tax Resolution, your go-to tax resolution team. Go Tax Go. On our Oakwood Heart Jewelers talking text line from Louisiana Radio Network, Jeff Palermo. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Hope you got a little bit of coffee in you by now.
Not yet, Mike. Not yet, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay, it's a slow process, so to speak. I get it. Jeff, I think today's game will tell a lot about both teams because maybe you watched the first game for South Carolina. They really weren't impressive, and then I'm not really sure how good Kentucky is. I mean, they took it to them and physically beat them up, but I don't know. Again, looking at that Wildcat team this year, they don't seem to have a lot of the similarities we've seen with some of the Kentucky teams in the past. And with LSU, it was almost like we just going to roll the helmets out last weekend against Nichols. Nichols took it to them. I don't care what Brian Kelly says. They physically got moved around up front. I think this game against a team at 11 o'clock in the morning, game day there, is going to tell you a little bit of about both teams and what type of clubs both of them have.
Yeah, I'm kind of interested to see where LSU as far as its mental makeup, Mike. I mean,
I agree.
As you mentioned, they just kind of sleptwalked through that game against Nichols, and The reasons that Coach Brian Kelly gave for it are all understandable, and I get it. I think we all, any of us that go to Las Vegas for a weekend are a little sluggish the next week, right? I mean, that's kind of how it is.
So, Herb, you want to comment on that or what?
Yeah, man, I was sure bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to roll the next week.
So I'm sure, but seriously, I'm kind of wondering where the makeup is. You know, you had you put everything you had for several months into that USC game, and you come up short again in a season opener, and then you play Nichols, and you're hoping you can run the football, and you still really can't run the football, and Colin Guggenheim is, you know, ripping off long runs against you, and, you know, just a lot of the things that you were hoping to at least get accomplished in that game, you were not able to accomplish. And so you come into this game saying, hey, we still want to run the football. You know, we heard from Emory Jones that, hey, this is what we're working on. It's a point of emphasis. We got to get it done. We're fighting, scratching, and clawing to get it done. So let's see the makeup of this team here, and if they really feel that, hey, they're one of the 12 teams that should be in a college football playoff. I think that's kind of what I'm anticipating or looking forward to seeing, just how they come out and play. Are they ready to go here at 11 a.m.?
Herb?
Jeff, do you think – let me ask you this. After seeing this team play 2 weeks in a row, do you think they can turn the aggression, the sheer want to and the physicality, do you think they can turn that around today?
Well, I sure hope so. I mean, they talked about it all off season about what that this is what they wanted to do. I mean, we heard Will Campbell talking quite a bit about it before the season, and it certainly hasn't happened. And then on the flip side, on the defensive line, you're losing your best defensive tackle. Your five-star prospect, you can't get him on the field as far as a freshman and Dominic McKinley. And so, yeah, let's see what they're made of, especially on that offensive line, because by all accounts, that the strength of the South Carolina team is their defensive line. And so for South Carolina, I think for them to have any kind of a chance in this game, they're going to have to really be disruptive. They're going to have to get in the face of Garrett Nussmeier. They're going to have to make him feel uncomfortable. You know, Garrett Nussmeier now has 3 starts under his belt, but this is really his first true road start. Now, he's been around. He's been on the sidelines. He understands the environment, so I think that certainly does help. But it's a little bit different when the bullets start flying. So yeah. I'm eager to see what happens in the line of scrimmage today and whether LSU can control it. And this offensive line, all this talk about them, all this hype about them, you know, this is a game where they certainly need to show up.
Whit Weeks has been the guy on the defensive side, the football. When you looked at it defensively, front 7, man, he is all over the field. You can see his instincts as a football player. He rarely takes a false step. His ability to close in fast on the ball carrier, he can run east and west really well. And from what I see, he has gotten better in the coverage part of the game of putting himself in reverse and being able to kind of watch the eyes of a quarterback. Your thoughts on Weeks? And because you can hear Brian talking about, I'm going to play more 3 linebacker sets more with Weeks, with Greg Penn Jr., and Harold Perkins, who he was in the Witness Protection Agency last week against Nichols. So your thoughts on Whit Weeks?
Well, I mean, I think when we watched last year, the feeling was, hey, this kid should be playing more. I understand he's a freshman. Yeah. But once Omar Spates got healthy, Weeks went back to the sideline. So this is a kid that, it's hard just not to notice him on the football field. He always seems to be around the ball. He looks like a guy that can shed blocks. And I think that's one of the biggest things that you see with Harold Perkins is his inability to really do that. And Weeks can do it. And I get it. This really is the perfect team to bring out the, you know, a 3 linebacker set, go to more of a 4-3 instead of playing a nickel, because, I mean, South Carolina is not going to throw for, at least they shouldn't. Who knows? With LSU's
bite your tongue on that, though, Jeff.
But they shouldn't be able to throw for over I'll give them 250 yards. Maybe they throw for 200. Yeah. They have a good day, but they're not going to be throwing the ball all over the place. And they're going to try to win this game by controlling the football, running it with their quarterback and their running backs, and that's how they're going to win. So it's a perfect game to get three linebackers out there, see how it looks, and then see if putting Harold Perkins a little bit more on the edge, whether that makes a difference that we certainly notice him here a lot more this afternoon.
You know, interesting stat, guys, just so y'all know, SEC college football total defensive stats for 2024, LSU is last. Even though it doesn't look like they're playing bad, if that makes any sense, there's times where it doesn't look good. But LSU right now is leading the SEC with total yards gained on, which is 742 over the past two games. So they're dead last right now in that.
Well, that hadn't changed from last year. It's sort of the same carbon copy. And so, and you got different schemes. So, man, you got to find playmakers here. And Jeff, one of the guys, and he sort of talked it up this week, is Parrish Chan, who's getting his opportunity now with Jacoby and Guillory out. You got to count on Paris to become a bigger part of your defense up front, because, man, if Nickel State is moving you around, you know, you got other teams down the road that got a lot more talent, say, up front along the offensive line than the Colonels do.
Well, I think one of the reasons why the belief is that LSU's defense does look better from a season ago is because I think you notice the defensive line a lot more this season.
Yes.
Despite last year's defensive line having three defensive tackles that were drafted. But they're just a little more active. You know, the ends are Savion Jones, of course, had a really nice game against the USC. And Parrish Chan is off to a really nice start. I mean, this is a guy that's played a lot of football. Yep. 3 years at Arizona, mm-hmm. Now in the second season at LSU. I mean, if the light doesn't come on now, it's never going to come on.
And now
he does get the opportunity. Now he gets the opportunity to move inside. I think you're going to see a lot of him there and see what he can do. He seems bigger. The guy he's got a great attitude. He's probably one of the better interviews as far as player-wise goes for LSU. So he's a guy we're going to see a lot more from. I'm kind of interested to see Sean Washington, what he can do to the junior college transfer. I know Brian Kelly really talked him up, saying that he did a nice job for Jacoby and Guillory, but I still think that the Guillory injury is just
it's a massive loss for this team. It is a
punch to the gut. There's no doubt about it. When you started the season and you sit there and said, hey, who are the three or four guys at LSU can't afford to lose? He was one of them. And that's a tough one right there. And now you're, as we mentioned, they're going up against a team that's going to want to try to run the ball, run it right at you. So these defensive tackles, this is where Bo Davis makes his money, right? This is where this is why you go out and get a guy like Bo Davis, one of the best defensive line coaches in the country, to see if you can't coach him up and have them play a little bit, have them play a little bit better than their capabilities.
Wilson Alexander is reporting this morning. Wilson does a fantastic job covering the Tigers, and Wilson's under a difficult situation personal-wise with his wife, but he is reporting that Jordan Allen won't play today
at
the strong safety position. And so, man, a spot where – that's another position where Deshaun Spears now, young guy, hey kid, you were the number two guy, but you're the starter now, so you got to play like a starter. And so that thins out an area at the safety position where you're going to have to play the young kids and see what they got.
I think both on the defensive line and the defensive secondary, I see LSU playing a bunch of guys. I mean, I just think, all of them. I mean, I think he alluded to it maybe a couple of weeks ago where, you know, these guys in defensive secondary, you're looking to get, 30 to 40 plays with them and you're rotating guys in and out. The play of Zy Alexander was good, but hey, this guy was one of the best cornerbacks in the Southland Conference 2 years ago. So you go up against the Southland Conference. So he goes up against a Southland Conference team. You expect him to look good. What makes it at least a little bit better is the fact that it was his first game since tearing his ACL last October. So getting him back in the mix of things, that can get Sage Ryan back to safety. That gets him to his natural position. So hopefully, with the injury to Jordan Allen, and now you got at least Sage over there at safety, and so maybe that might not be as big of a loss. But Deshaun Spears, Kylan Jackson, those are two young safeties that I think for LSU to really see an improvement in defense this year, those two young guys really, they need to make some positive steps forward. They really need to develop quickly as far as acceleration of their development here for LSU to get to where they want to be, especially come November as far as a defensive team.
Jeff, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Go get you some coffee and some breakfast.
Yeah.
And but, man, we appreciate you waking up early and contributing to the show, as always. Great job, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
no
Jeff.
Problem, guys. Got to get a workout in, too, man. Got to stay heart healthy, too, all right?
I got you.
That's right.
That was Jeff Palermo in our Inside the Tiger Den segment. It's brought to you by Go Tax Resolution, your go-to tax resolution team, Go Tax Go. We'll be back in finishing up here in our number one of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTellier along with Herb Tyler right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're finishing up here on our number one on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTellier along with Herb Tyler. And Herb, I brought it up, so we'll do this real quick before we finish off. But I just think that loss of Jacoby and Guillory in the middle is big for this football team, because you were sort of paper thin up front to begin with, even with Jacobian.
Paper thin. He's the leader on the team. He's a guy that everybody looked up to and was expecting a great season with. So it's going to be tough. Tough to bounce back from that.
Yeah, and so and I know one thing. I know what South Carolina's going to do today. I mean, they saw that film of Nicholls State, too. They're going to run the football right at them.
That's right. I mean, you got to see what's going to happen. You got to test those waters. So, I mean, I would do the same if I were them.
We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTellier along with Herb Tyler. Want to thank MAP Construction being our presenting sponsor right after this news break here on the Big 870 WWL. Good morning, everyone. It's our number two of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTellier along with Herb Tyler here on the Big 870 WWL. Grab you a cup of coffee. We got one more hour of our Tiger Tailgating Show, and then we'll throw it to the LSU Radio Network. And it's an early morning kickoff at 11 a.m. in Columbia, South Carolina, as the Fighting Tigers will play South Carolina Gamecocks. And you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL. Herb, one of the things that in just watching the film of South Carolina, if I'm LSU, one area I take full advantage of, I do not know how well they will match up against Mason Taylor at tight end. And you throw in Tre'Davious Green and Kay Pimpton, at that tight end spot. I think that's an area where Garrett Nussmeier may be able to make some hay today. I don't know from an athletic standpoint if they can match up athletic-wise with any one of those three tight ends. I think they become – I know they've been a big part of the offense for the first two games. I think they become even a bigger part against South Carolina, getting the ball out quick and fast, especially understanding who's coming off the edge.
You know, I was always impressed with Mason Taylor's size and just how good he looks in uniform. This year, I'm more impressed with the way he's playing football. I think he's turned the corner, and he understands the game better. The lights turned on for him. He's got 11 receptions, 102 yards, averaging 9.3 yards a catch. He doesn't have any touchdowns right now, but the kid has turned the corner. And then you add in Pimpton, who's going to be phenomenal as well. But, you know, the thing about it is you see something that can be an area of success for LSU football. The question is, does the offensive coordinator see that? Do those guys, can they utilize the strengths that LSU has against a fast-flowing defense that's going to be coming at them? And that's what I was talking about. Hey, let the rush come, dump the ball over their heads with those tight ends or running backs or some screen routes or quick hitting screen plays to the receivers, and let's see what happens after that. I agree with you. I think that utilizing the tight end today could be detrimental for South Carolina, but a really great mismatch opportunity that can be in the favor for LSU. And look, Mason Taylor is, I think he's, before our eyes, slowly becoming one of the best tight ends in the country. He's catching everything this year. He's a lot more tough than what he was in the previous years. And I see him taking the blow to the DBs now. So it's fun to see that. So I'm hoping not only can they get those guys involved, but I'm hoping they can get the backside of the backfield involved as well. I think that would be something that could help kind of stymie the rush and then allow Nussmeier to at some point kind of sit back there and scan the defense and then put the ball into Kyron's hands, the outside receiver's hands.
One of the things you bring up, and being a former quarterback, I'll let you explain this on what makes a screenplay really work, because you got a couple guys here. Josh catches the ball really well coming out of the backfield, and he's not the biggest cat around or the fastest, but man, he's sort of slick. He's sort of slick in how he does it. Caleb, now, once he gets the ball in his hands and he turns him shoulder square, good luck, buddy, because he's either going to run you over or going to run past you. But what is the key from your standpoint, and what makes a good screen really, really set up? We saw Pierre Thomas do it, and he would get into all kind of intricacies of how he set it up and how he sort of faked people. You knew it was coming sometimes. You still couldn't stop it. From your standpoint as a quarterback, what makes that screen pass so effective?
Well, it's the deception of still making it look as though you're going to be aggressive and blocking, right? And you're going to try to do everything you can to prevent the defensive line, linebackers from getting to the quarterback. But then, you know, after, you know, 1-1,000, 2-1,000, you let that guy go and you kind of, oh, man, I made a mistake. And then the guy's rushing up and you slip out and you either slip out, you know, to the right or left of the field, or you kind of slip behind him, meaning kind of, you know, kind of center screen, if you will, middle screen. And then the quarterback has to do a great job of looking away from the screen and then kind of, you know, deceiving the defense again, like he's scanning down the field. And then as those guys start to rush, you know, you just kind of feel, you know, fall back just about two or three steps, and you got to lightly toss the ball to the receiver or running back or tight end, whoever it is. And the reason why I say lightly toss the ball, have some touch on it, because I've seen a lot of times where quarterbacks would just throw bullets at these guys and they're literally 6 yards away, and it's not, it just doesn't work. So you got to have some patience. One, you got to have a lot of deception. Two, and then you got to be able to, you know, touch pass the ball to the whoever the receiver is that's going to be catching that ball. Now, I would feel for any safety or DB, if Caleb Jackson's got the ball in his hand and he's got, you know, three big offensive linemen that can move in front of him. I really would feel for that. I would feel for if you have a receiver screen coming in and those big offensive linemen are in front of, you know, Aaron Anderson or Zion Thomas, or somebody like Xavion Thomas, I'm sorry. It would be great, I think, if LSU could utilize those types of screenplays this morning against South Carolina, because I just feel like South Carolina is going to pin their ears back and they're going to try to get to us. Now, I also think that South Carolina is going to try to do some different stunts and some different movements up front in order to confuse LSU's offensive linemen and also Nussmeier in calling protection prior to the play, the ball being snapped. And I think that would be a great tactic for South Carolina, because everybody's hearing the strength of LSU's offensive line is their pass block. So how do you negate strength? You either have to be just physically better than them, or you have to just out finesse them. And what I mean by that is out scheme them, scheme and do stunts and twist and all kind of different little things up front and different movements up front. That's going to really confuse those guys for LSU.
I think they're going to try to attack DJ Chester. I think that they're going to shoot people up the middle because, you know, that's the shortest route to the quarterback is a straight line, right? Okay, so you bring you a linebacker or a safety. Now, Garrett is pretty smart, and he can get rid of that football real quickly, and you short one player in the secondary if you're going to start blitzing. But I do think what you bring up is correct. I'm not real sure they feel confident, even though they have two really good edge rushers, that they may try to overload that offensive line. And I think the overload will come right over the center because it's the quickest way to disrupt Nussmeier.
Yeah, and what Nussmeier has to do is allow that pressure to come up the middle, and the offensive line has to just what we call block down, just block down to keep all that congestion inside. And he can, and Nuss can slide right or left, whichever way that he feels most comfortable sliding, and also while keeping his eyes downfield, understanding what the defensive backs are doing, and you know where the concepts of the routes are going to be, slide whichever way and be able to get the ball out of his hands, or run the football, go get six and get down, go get eight and get out of bounds. So then I'm gonna tell you that's the best way to combat that portion of it. So if South Carolina is having some success overloading the offensive line up the middle, through the A gap, B gap, if that makes any sense, then Nuss can get out of there, get the ball out of his hands. If he doesn't have the opportunity to run the football, that's going to slow them down as well. And we're not asking Nuss to be Jaden Daniels from last year and take it 80. I just need you to get six or eight and get out of bounds or get down or slide or something. Just to keep the defense true to thinking, hey, this guy may take off and run the football. So it's going to be interesting to watch. It's going to be interesting to watch how LSU reacts to those types of stunts and movement up front and in the overload. And then what do we do, right? Do we do a little quick little pitch out to the running back if they're going to overload up the, you know, in the A B gap? Do we get Nuss out on sprints or rollouts? Do we do any kind of misdirection when it comes to bootlegs or pass plays, things of that nature? So that's going to be interesting to watch.
That's why I think Mason Taylor becomes a bigger part of the attack today. Because if you're going to try that little trick of running people right up the middle and sending extra, man, I can just catch it and just try to toss it real quick. And you got one less guy in the middle to stop Mason. And that could turn from a 5-yard pass into a 25-yard gain. Because if you live by the blitz, you die by it too. Okay. Now, Buddy Ryan, he was great with it in the NFL. But, man, look, he had talent with the Bears. He had an all-star team. And he sort of had that same sort of element with the Eagles. When he went to Arizona, it wasn't quite the same. The scheme was the same, but the players were different. And so it does make a difference. You can talk about all this next man up all you want. Depends on who the man is. When we come back, I'll have you talk about, I think, a big addition to the South Carolina lineup in Raheem Rocket Sanders. Man, I saw him in high school. He was one of the most highly recruited running backs in the country coming out of Florida. He was an outstanding basketball player, track athlete. Man, he is a big guy. Now, I don't know if he's 6 foot 2.5 as they put in the program. I think that might be stretching things a little bit. But he's a guy that runs with power, but also he's got some speed, and he's a nice addition to the South Carolina offense. We'll be back with more of our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTay along with Herb Tyler right after this break here on the Big 870 WWF. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTay along with Herb Tyler. And Herb, we talked a little bit about this in leading up to this segment. Raheem Rocket Sanders. coming out of the Florida high school ranks, he was one of the most highly recruited running backs in the country. Bang, he hits the scene as a true freshman. He averaged over 5 yards a carry, but it was what he did in 2022. He averaged 6.5 yards a carry. He scored, I think it was 10 rushing touchdowns. I think a couple catches that he had for scores. Last year, he seemed to be disconnected from the team. He sort of saw the water rising in the creek at Arkansas, and he didn't mesh too well. And I'm gonna say this: I think he was one of the first sort of big name guys to say, "You know what? I'm out. I'm leaving." And it was not even December 15th. Not only did he decide that he was transferring out, he decided he was going to South Carolina. So I guess it took a couple of days for the check to clear. But he's a guy, you understand, when he's rolling, he can carry a football team. And that guy is somebody LSU has got to be able to at least slow down. Because we've seen him at Arkansas when he has sort of taken over games, and what Coach Pittman has done at Arkansas, he built around the running game. But you could see that last year, for various reasons, and they said he had an injury. And I think he saw that that was a lot more to it than what maybe everybody else saw, and he was getting out real fast. But I think he's a major impact player for South Carolina if they're going to have a winning season this season.
Yeah, he was at Arkansas. I mean, we saw it. He was a guy who was, in my opinion, a force to be reckoned with early. Last year, not so much, but early, definitely. 6 foot, 230-pound running back who can move with the best of them, who understands the game of football. He really feels as like he's the man. And then when you have that ability or that thought process behind you and that belief in yourself, I mean, it just makes things much better. So, you know, this year for South Carolina, he's at 37 carries, 142 yards rushing, two touchdowns, and he's leading the team. And he is the guy. And it's crazy because he didn't even participate in spring practices this year. That tells you a lot about the guy, right? He comes in January, doesn't do spring practices, but he gets in the you know, summer and then fall camp, if you will. And he earns a position. So he's a guy that's going to be interesting to see today because, you know, how's South Carolina offense going to match up against LSU's defense? I already said earlier LSU's defense is ranked, quote-unquote, dead last in the SEC when it comes to stats, right? Well, they're giving up 742 yards a game. Now, in that, LSU's only given up 109 yards of rushing per game. And so is South Carolina going to try to run the football, or are they going to try to hit LSU in what everyone thinks is LSU's weak point right now, which is, the youth at the defensive back level. And with a couple guys being out, and it's crazy, you know, with Guillory being out and on the front end of the defense and then on the back end of the defense, you've got some guys that are going to be out. It's interesting to see how South Carolina is going to attack that because technically they can pretty much try to do whatever they want to do. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. They can hit intermediate passes. They can do some screen routes. They can go deep. They can come across the middle. They can do whatever they want to do. Because it seems like LSU's kind of breaking down on defense right now.
One of the things with Sanders to watch today, and if he had any negative, so to speak, at Arkansas on the field, it was the fact that at times he was very impatient with his blockers up front. He had some games where he would run right up in the backside of an offensive lineman. He didn't have the greatest patience to set things up. Now, has he gotten better with that? I don't know, but I do remember having watched him and taking notes. I went back and looked at it last night that he was impatient at times with his blockers. He wanted to hit that hole and hit it fast and then get up the field because he's a big man with, you know, he develops his speed because of his power in the lower body. And I think he didn't want to wait. You know, it wasn't like Le'Veon Bell. He wanted to just hit it and get it. And so that for LSU, be a little bit cognizant of that. Is he still impatient? Because that's where some guys just aren't as a running back. You know, and it just sometimes isn't there for him. But I want to see if that's improved for Sanders, because that was the one negative I saw in him as a runner at Arkansas.
Well, you know, it's you bring up a great point. I never understood how a running back or anybody who has the football in their hands run into their own players. Like, when it's designed a certain way and we've been practicing all week and this is what we do. Why are we doing this? You know, I'm a man, Mike, who has an esteemed ability to have great vision on the football field. Okay, I'm like a Tony Dorsett-ish, Alvin Kamara-ish type of visual person. And I remember seeing this stuff before it happens, but also allowing it to develop so that I can get through it when it happens, right? And so if a running back, to me, if he's running up the backside of his offensive lineman, there's two things that's happening. It's either, one, the offensive lineman is not moving, getting any penetration, and then also a combination of, two, the running back is just hoping for the best, right, instead of seeing what's developing and understanding what's on. If a quarterback did that, let's say a quarterback dropped back and the receiver is supposed to be 10 yards and in, you know, and he's just supposed to throw the football, and without looking and without, you know, understanding that there potentially may be a linebacker or a safety that may rob him or something that's trying to come down or whatever, blindly just throws the football, that quarterback wouldn't be in the game. He wouldn't play. He wouldn't last long. So to me, that's the same as seeing a running back that is impatient and that does not allow the development of the play to happen.
Yeah, and let me just say this. Le'Veon Bell was one of one. Nobody did it like he did. He was as patient a guy running the ball as I've ever witnessed at the college pro level. But he is one of one. There's not another guy you can sort of compare him to that did it the same way. But that's one thing with Rocket. Watch him today, how patient he is for his blockers up front. When we come back,
Le'Veon Bell would almost come to a stop. And then shoot through the hole. It was amazing to see that.
Unique doing that. When we come back, it'll be time for our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodeau Regional Health System. We'll have on with Zach Nagy, who covers the LSU Tigers, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTillia along with Herb Tyler. And we'll tell everybody, kickoff time at 11 o'clock. You can hear it right here on the Big 870 WWL on free on the Odyssey app. And then at 4 o'clock, Herb Tyler and I will be at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Island Road, I think it is, in Baton Rouge. And we'll be doing our post-game Purple and Gold show. And we'll give you all the details and our kind of outlook or in-look of what happened as LSU plays South Carolina today. Now for our Tiger Scout Notebook segment, and it's brought to you by Thibodeau Regional Health Systems, totally focused on patient care. We have on with us from Sports Illustrated, who covers the LSU Tigers, Zach Nagy. Zach, thanks so much for joining us early this morning. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, of course, man. Let's get it.
Zach, this sort of looks like a strength against strength, weakness against weakness. Because if you look at South Carolina on their football team, I think the strength certainly is up front along the defensive line. LSU's offensive line was supposed to be the real strength. And they've done a really good job in pass protection. I'm not going to take anything away from there. They've given Garrett a lot of time to throw the football. They have not run block well. And that's just sort of strange to me. But in watching South Carolina last year, man, they had Spencer Rattler running for his life. Their offensive line was not very good at all. But LSU's defensive line and now losing Jacoby and Guillory, that ain't a strength on LSU's team either. So it's strength against strength and weakness against weakness here, and kind of where the bow breaks with both of these teams. We'll find out a lot more about how good they are after this game.
Yeah, no doubt. And for me, it's a game that's going to be won and lost in the trenches. And that's kind of a cliche take. I think that's most games. But for this one specifically, you look at a South Carolina defensive line led by freshman phenom Dylan Stewart. I mean, this is a guy out of high school who's a five-star recruit, but he's playing like a six-star recruit. This guy looks absolutely phenomenal out on the edge. And it's going to put LSU's offensive line to the test here. You have two of the top tackles in the country in Will Campbell and Emory Jones. And they're going to be going up against a really, really phenomenal South Carolina defensive line unit. So it's going to be a game won and lost in the trenches here. And then looking at the other side of the ball for LSU, look, that defensive tackle rotation is going to be one to keep tabs on. It's kind of a matchup to watch this week. Obviously, South Carolina's offensive line isn't necessarily stellar, but you kind of say the same about LSU's defensive line right now. There's work to be done, like you alluded to, with Jacoby and Guillory out. So you're going to have to see other guys step up, whether it's Gio Paez, JVR Suggs, Shone Washington, true freshman Ahmad Bro. There are guys who are going to have to step up here and enter the mix in a big way. So, yeah, for sure, this is going to be one that's won and lost in the trenches, and we'll see that early on.
The linebacking core, we've heard Brian Kelly talk about it. It'll be a lot more of the three linebacker sets with Greg Penn, Whit Weeks, Harold Perkins, wherever they're going to use him at. Not they got to use him out on the edge, Zach. I mean, come on, you got to play to his strength as a player. And that is his ability to get off the line of scrimmage and be disruptive in the backfield. You can do – let the NFL fool with him as far as developing his skills and pass protection. And he's going to fill out that frame more physically better. But for LSU today, it's about what's best for you. And he's best out on the edge rushing the quarterback.
He is. And it's a matter of kind of Blake Baker putting his players in position to be successful. And in order for Harold Perkins to be successful, he has to be out on the edge. That's his bread and butter. We saw it his freshman year. Obviously, in year two, there was kind of a decline because they put him back at that linebacker position. So put him out on the edge, let him work, and you're going to see a really nice three linebacker unit today. And it starts with Harold Perkins. But obviously, Whit Weeks has got to keep tabs on. This has been your best defensive player through the first two games of the season. And look, Whit's a fantastic player. He has a really good twitchiness, athleticism, gets off his block well. So I'm excited to see Whit kind of take on an expanded role alongside Harold Perkins. There's always that conversation, can those two guys coexist? Well, today you're going to get a taste of that, and I'm really excited to see how Whit kind of plays out. But when it comes to Harold Perkins, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. He's got to be on the edge and kind of let him get in the backfield and pass rush, and we're going to see that today.
Herb?
Yeah, Zach, you hit it on the head. You got Raheem Sanders, Lenorius Sellers, Robbie Ashford, and Jared Brown. Those are the leading rushers for South Carolina, right? And Raheem Sanders is the only running back. You got two quarterbacks and a wide receiver that's the other lead rusher. So you're going to have some guys out there that can run, you know, run stop, if you will. You know, we're talking a lot about defense, but offensively, how can LSU get their run game going today against South Carolina? Do you see that happening today at any point?
I do, and it's going to start by keeping it simple. And instead of kind of working Will Campbell as a lead blocker on the outside and pulling, I think you just need to keep it basic and kind of work with your bread and butter here. You're going to see a lot of Josh Williams, in my opinion, just because he's such an elite-level pass protector. So you're going to try to get him going early, throw in Caleb Jackson as well. I mean, he's a bowling ball downfield. So it's not even necessarily to me about getting the running kind of rushing attack going. It's about getting your running backs going, whether it's kind of checking down to Caleb Jackson on the screen play and letting him turn it upfield. Because, look, he's scared to tackle. It's a 6-foot, 235-pound monster with the ball in his hand. You do not want to get in his way. So I know the rushing attack is where a lot of people are going to be talking about kind of getting that rolling early. But to me, it's just getting the running backs involved early as a whole, whether it's Josh Williams in the pass pro or Caleb Jackson on some checkdowns in the flat.
Zach, I think one of the things Herb brought up in our first hour was about Aaron Anderson and his use. You see the extended role with him, also Xavion Thomas, in these little quick bubble screens, and if you're going to use the jet sweep. I want to see the development of a number two receiver now. That guy probably won't play today, and that's Chris. He won't play today, and Chris Hilton. But C.J. Daniels, they got to get him the football and more involved in the game. And because of the elbow injury against USC, we didn't see a lot of Kyle Parker when he expected to play today. I think the development of a number two guy has to be there. The one thing I give Kyron, he's taking the challenge of being the number one guy, and he's doing his job. Now, somebody else got to be able to help out at that wide receiver position.
Yeah, for sure. Kyron's lived up to kind of the hype so far this year. He's been fantastic through 2 weeks. And like you said, now it's about kind of developing that second guy. And with Chris Hilton out once again, all focus shifts to C.J. Daniels. We've seen Xavion Thomas and Aaron Anderson become Swiss Army knives for this team. They've been fantastic in the short game, intermediate game. But when it comes to a guy like C.J. Daniels, he can kind of unlock a whole different element for this offense, whether it's short, intermediate, or the deep ball. He's a physical receiver who has tremendous tools to go up and get the football. So C.J. Daniels is obviously going to be a guy that you try to keep tabs on here, but Mason Taylor's really provided that kind of second pass catcher spot. He's been fantastic in the short game. His hands have been phenomenal. He's getting down and dirty. He's doing really everything you want. But when it comes to that wide receiver two slot, it's all about C.J. Daniels here. And it's a step up in competition from where he was at last year at Liberty. Now he's entering SEC play against a South Carolina team who has a fiery defense. It's kind of up to him to step up here and provide Garrett Nussmeier with a second receiver who can become consistent like Kyron Lacy has through 2 weeks. So you kind of hit it right there. That's a guy who has all the attention circled to him to become that second receiver.
How would you grade out what we've seen from DJ Chester at center? A lot of times, this is just my opinion, other than in the quarterback spot, I think it's the hardest position to play. I don't care if you're a freshman, redshirt, freshman, whatever. Because not only do you have to know what you're doing, but you got to understand who the four other guys you making the calls and adjustments to. And most importantly, you better make damn sure that snap is correct on every snap. I mean, it's not, 50% of the time. It's 100 out of 100 times. You got to make the snap right. Looking over it in DJ, I think he's had some good moments. He's also been at times a little bit shaky in the run blocking game, where I thought that would be his strength. I thought he'd be a much stronger run blocker at the point of attack. So your thoughts on what you've seen from DJ Chester, who played some a little bit last year, but really now he's the anchor up front. He's the man in the middle and making those adjustment calls. And I think you're going to see a lot of delay blitzes come from South Carolina today, right up the chute.
Yeah, the center position is kind of the position that makes the engine go on the offensive line. And DJ Chester has done a fantastic job so far. Obviously, there's going to be hiccups here and there just because you're returning four out of your five starters on the offensive line from a season ago, DJ Chester being that new guy up front. So there's always going to be a couple hurdles, a couple hiccups here and there. And we've certainly seen that in the run game so far. But from a pass protection perspective, he's been fantastic,
as
has the entire offensive line. But for me, it's all about kind of just diversifying the playbook and allowing that rushing attack to evolve. And it's going to start with a guy like DJ Chester up front, picking up defenses and kind of passing that on to the other guys. So I'm excited to see what he can do to step up and allow the offense to diversify that playbook, get a little bit more creative. Obviously, it starts with the big guys up front in the trenches, and DJ Chester is going to play a big part there. But through 2 weeks, I've been impressed. It's just all about continuing to hit his stride and evolve as the weeks go on here in the 2024 season.
One of the things, Zach, you brought up to us when we had you on Sports Talk was the development of the young safeties and Deshaun Spears and Colin Jackson and Jordan Allen. And Jordan won't play today from all indications. But you see now Colin Jackson and Deshaun Spears having a much bigger impact and a quicker impact. And Jaden Gilbert, who came in with a lot of fanfare from Texas A&M, he hasn't maybe so far lived up to the billing of coming in as that big-time recruit that could solidify your safety position. It's been the young kids that's been the talk of the safety spot.
Yeah, no doubt. Jordan Gilbert was a guy who a lot of people would have circled as an immediate impact guy, a player who would come in and step up for this team so far on the defense. And like you alluded to, we haven't quite seen that so far. We didn't see him get significant snaps last week. He was underwhelming in week one against USC. So, it's kind of been about the youngsters. And for me, it's about Deshaun Spears. This is a guy who, when we spoke on Sports Talk, I was kind of just eager to talk about. He's a hard hitter. He's electric. He's long. He's lanky. He's the prototypical LSU DB, and he's really stepping up to the plate so far as a true freshman. Obviously, we can talk about Kylan Jackson because he's a guy who's been fantastic as a redshirt freshman. But for me, when I'm looking at the youngsters right now, it's all about Deshaun Spears. I think he's going to take on a really big role today, obviously with Jordan Allen out today. But you're going to see a lot of guys rotate in. You're going to see four cornerbacks, four safeties, but specifically at the safety position that we're talking about, it's going to be Deshaun Spears, Kylan Jackson, Jordan Gilbert, and Sage Ryan. Those are guys that are going to be making an impact here. And I'm excited to see how they kind of work with it. Throw in Major Burns as well, who's going to drop back at the safety. You have a lot of guys who can come in and do a by-committee approach, take 20 to 30 snaps, 15 to 20 snaps each, and work from there. But I'm excited to see what Deshaun Spears can do today, Mike. I really think that he can step up to the plate in a big-time SEC game and continue to carve out a big-time role in his first season with LSU.
Zach, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. Go get you a cup of coffee and a little breakfast, and we appreciate your time and insights. Thank you, Zach.
I appreciate it, you guys. You have a good one.
All righty. That's a wrap on our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health System, focused on the patient. Thibodaux Regional does a great job in the community here. We'll be back to finish it off here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. We're finishing up. We'll throw it to the LSU pregame network crew, and Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler finishing up our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show, and we'll be back on at 4 o'clock this afternoon for our Purple and Gold Point After Show from Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Herb, I'll throw it to you, and give me the keys to victory for LSU today.
You know, it's weird, Mike, but I think the first key to victory is going to be, did Coach Kelly get the attention of the guys? Are the coaches going to be coaching as one? Can they get these guys to become the team that they want them to become? It's an 11 o'clock kickoff. It's away. It's at a big-time stadium against a big-time opponent in South Carolina. And you have to have the guys' attention, and they have to become a team in jail. This is the third game of the season. This is where you become or start to become who you're going to be. All the kinks are out, and here we are. We know what you can do the first two games, so here we go. The second key, I think, to the game is going to be, how do we overcome the injuries that we're sustaining and the people that's going to be out? And that's on offense and defense as well. And it's going to be up to the guys who's going to step in and do whatever they need to do in order to be successful. And that's going to be interesting to see, because they're all kids. They're going to be the young guys that's going to step in and be in a hostile road, away game environment. That's going to be crazy. So, and then the third key is just go out there and play physical and be great. Play LSU football. That's it.
Herb, I'll see you at 4 o'clock, and we'll be at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. We'll throw it now to the LSU pregame network crew. And, again, kickoff time 11 o'clock a.m., and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 and free on the Odyssey app. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler. And, Herb, we talked a little bit about this in leading up to this segment. Raheem Rocket Sanders, coming out of the Florida high school ranks, he was one of the most highly recruited running backs in the country. Bang, he hits the scene as a true freshman. He averaged over 5 yards a carry, but it was what he did in 2022. He averaged 6.5 yards a carry. He scored, I think it was 10 rushing touchdowns, I think a couple catches that he had for scores. Last year, he seemed to be disconnected from the team. He sort of saw the water rising in the creek at Arkansas, and he didn't mesh too well. And I'm gonna say this: I think he was one of the first sort of big name guys to say, "You know what? I'm out. I'm leaving." And it was not even December 15th. Not only did he decide that he was transferring out, he decided he was going to South Carolina. So I guess it took a couple of days for the check to clear. But he's a guy, you understand, when he's rolling, he can carry a football team. And that guy is somebody LSU has got to be able to at least slow down. Because we've seen him at Arkansas when he has sort of taken over games, and what Coach Pittman has done at Arkansas, he built around the running game. But you could see that last year, for various reasons, and they said he had an injury. And he saw that that was a lot more to it than what maybe everybody else saw, and he was getting out real fast. But I think he's a major impact player for South Carolina if they're going to have a winning season this season.
Yeah, he was at Arkansas. I mean, we saw it. He was a guy who was, in my opinion, a force to be reckoned with early. Last year, not so much, but early, definitely. 6 foot, 230-pound running back who can move with the best of them, who understands the game of football. He really feels as like he's the man. And then when you have that ability or that thought process behind you and that belief in yourself, I mean, it just makes things much better. So, you know, this year for South Carolina, he's at 37 carries, 142 yards rushing, two touchdowns, and he's leading the team. And he is the guy. And it's crazy because he didn't even participate in spring practices this year. That tells you a lot about the guy, right? He comes in January, doesn't do spring practices, but he gets in the summer and then fall camp, if you will. And he earns a position. So he's a guy that's going to be interesting to see today because, you know, how's South Carolina offense going to match up against LSU's defense? I already said earlier LSU's defense is ranked, quote-unquote, dead last in the SEC when it comes to stats, right? Well, they're giving up 742 yards a game. Now, in that, LSU's only given up 109 yards of rushing per game. And so is South Carolina going to try to run the football, or are they going to try to hit LSU in what everyone thinks is LSU's weak point right now, which is, the youth at the defensive back level. And with a couple guys being out, and it's crazy, you know, with Guillory being out and on the front end of the defense and then on the back end of the defense, you've got some guys that are going to be out. It's interesting to see how South Carolina is going to attack that because technically they can pretty much try to do whatever they want to do. They can run the ball. They can throw the ball. They can hit intermediate passes. They can do some screen routes. They can go deep. They can come across the middle. They can do whatever they want to do. Because it seems like LSU's kind of breaking down on defense right now.
One of the things with Sanders to watch today, and if he had any negative, so to speak, at Arkansas on the field, it was the fact mm-hmm. that at times he was very impatient with his blockers up front. He had some games where he would run right up in the backside of an offensive lineman. He didn't have the greatest patience to set things up. Now, has he gotten better with that? I don't know, but I do remember having watched him and taking notes. So I went back and looked at it last night that he was impatient at times with his blockers. He wanted to hit that hole and hit it fast and then get up the field because he's a big man with, you know, he develops his speed because of his power in the lower body. And I think he didn't want to wait. You know, it wasn't like Le'Veon Bell. He wanted to just hit it and get it. And so that for LSU, be a little bit cognizant of that if he's still impatient, because that's where some guys just aren't as a running back. You know, and it just sometimes isn't there for him. But I want to see if that's improved for Sanders, because that was the one negative I saw in him as a runner at Arkansas.
Well, you know, it's you bring up a great point. I never understood how a running back or anybody who has the football in their hands run into their own players. Like, when it's designed a certain way, and we've been practicing all week, and this is what we do. Why are we doing this? You know, I'm a man, Mike, who has an esteem ability to have great vision on the football field. Okay, I'm like a Tony Dorsett-ish, Alvin Kamara-ish type of visual person. And I remember seeing this stuff before it happens, but also allowing it to develop so that I can get through it when it happens, right? And so if a running back to me, if he's running up the backside of his offensive lineman, there's two things that's happening. It's either, one, the offensive lineman is not moving, getting any penetration, and then also a combination of, two, the running back is just hoping for the best, right? Instead of seeing what's developing and understanding what's on. If a quarterback did that, let's say a quarterback dropped back and the receiver's supposed to be 10 yards and in, you know, and he's just supposed to throw the football, and without looking and without, you know, understanding that there potentially may be a linebacker or a safety that may rob him or something that's trying to come down or whatever, blindly just throws the football, that quarterback wouldn't be in the game. He wouldn't last long. So to me, that's the same as seeing a running back that is impatient and that does not allow the development of the play to happen.
Yeah, and let me just say this. Le'Veon Bell was one of one. Nobody did it like he did. He was as patient a guy running the ball as I've ever witnessed at the college pro level, but he is one of one. There's not another guy you can sort of compare him to that did it the same way. But that's one thing with Rocket. Watch him today. How patient he is for his blockers up front. When we come back,
Le'Veon Bell would almost come to a stop. And then shoot through the hole. It was amazing to see that.
He was unique doing that. When we come back, it'll be time for our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health System. We'll have on with Zach Nagy, who covers the LSU Tigers, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike DeTillo along with Herb Tyler. And we'll tell everybody, kickoff time at 11 o'clock. You can hear it right here on the Big 870 WWL on free on the Odyssey app. And then at 4 o'clock, Herb Tyler and I will be at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Island Road, I think it is, in Baton Rouge. And we'll be doing our post-game Purple and Gold show. And we'll give you all the details and our kind of outlook or in-look of what happened as LSU plays South Carolina today. Now for our Tiger Scout Notebook segment, and it's brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health Systems, totally focused on patient care. We have on with us from Sports Illustrated, who covers the LSU Tigers, Zach Nagy. Zach, thanks so much for joining us early this morning. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Yeah, of course, man. Let's get it.
Zach, this sort of looks like a strength against strength, weakness against weakness. Because if you look at South Carolina on their football team, I think the strength certainly is up front along the defensive line. LSU's offensive line was supposed to be the real strength, and they've done a really good job in pass protection. I'm not going to take anything away from there. They've given Garrett a lot of time to throw the football. They have not run block well. And that's just sort of strange to me. But in watching South Carolina last year, man, they had Spencer Rattler running for his life. Their offensive line was not very good at all. But LSU's defensive line, and now losing Jacoby and Guillory, that ain't a strength on LSU's team either. So it's strength against strength and weakness against weakness here, and kind of where the bow breaks with both of these teams. We'll find out a lot more about how good they are after this game.
Yeah, no doubt. And for me, it's a game that's going to be won and lost in the trenches. And that's kind of a cliche take. I think that's most games. But for this one specifically, you look at a South Carolina defensive line led by freshman phenom Dylan Stewart. I mean, this is a guy out of high school who's a five-star recruit, but he's playing like a six-star recruit. This guy looks absolutely phenomenal out on the edge. And it's going to put LSU's offensive line to the test here. You have two of the top tackles in the country in Will Campbell and Emory Jones. And they're going to be going up against a really, really phenomenal South Carolina defensive line unit. So it's going to be a game won and lost in the trenches here. And then looking at the other side of the ball for LSU, look, that defensive tackle rotation is going to be one to keep tabs on. It's kind of a matchup to watch this week. Obviously, South Carolina's offensive line isn't necessarily stellar, but you can kind of say the same about LSU's defensive line right now. There's work to be done, like you alluded to, with Jacoby and Guillory out. So you're going to have to see other guys step up, whether it's Gio Paez, JVR Suggs, Shone Washington, true freshman Ahmad Bro. There are guys who are going to have to step up here and enter the mix in a big way. So, yeah, for sure, this is going to be one that's won and lost in the trenches, and we'll see that early on.
The linebacking core, we've heard Brian Kelly talk about it. It'll be a lot more of the three linebacker sets with Greg Penn, Whit Weeks, Harold Perkins, wherever they're going to use him at. Not they got to use him out on the edge, Zach. I mean, come on, you got to play to his strength as a player. And that is his ability to get off the line of scrimmage and be disruptive in the backfield. You can do – let the NFL fool with him as far as developing his skills and pass protection. And he's going to fill out that frame more physically better. But for LSU today, it's about what's best for you. And he's best out on the edge rushing the quarterback.
He is. And it's a matter of kind of Blake Baker putting his players in position to be successful. And in order for Harold Perkins to be successful, he has to be out on the edge. That's his bread and butter. We saw it his freshman year. Obviously, in year two, there was kind of a decline because they put him back at that linebacker position. So put him out on the edge, let him work, and you're going to see a really nice three linebacker unit today. And it starts with Harold Perkins. But obviously, Whit Weeks has got to keep tabs on. This has been your best defensive player through the first two games of the season. And look, Whit's a fantastic player. He has a really good twitchiness, athleticism, gets off his block well. So I'm excited to see Whit kind of take on an expanded role alongside Harold Perkins. There's always that conversation, can those two guys coexist? Well, today you're going to get a taste of that, and I'm really excited to see how Whit kind of plays out. But when it comes to Harold Perkins, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. He's got to be on the edge and kind of let him get in the backfield and pass rush, and we're going to see that today.
Herb?
Yeah, Zach, you hit it on the head. You got Raheem Sanders, Lenorius Sellers, Robbie Ashford, and Jarrett Brown. Those are the leading rushers for South Carolina, right? And Raheem Sanders is the only running back. You got two quarterbacks and a wide receiver that's the other lead rusher. So you're going to have some guys out there that can run, you know, run stop, if you will. You know, we're talking a lot about defense, but offensively, how can LSU get their run game going today against South Carolina? Do you see that happening today at any point?
I do, and it's going to start by keeping it simple. And instead of kind of working Will Campbell as a lead blocker on the outside and pulling, I think you just need to keep it basic and kind of work with your bread and butter here. You're going to see a lot of Josh Williams, in my opinion, just because he's such an elite-level pass protector. So you're going to try to get him going early, throw in Caleb Jackson as well. I mean, he's a bowling ball downfield. So it's not even necessarily to me about getting the running kind of rushing attack going. It's about getting your running backs going, whether it's kind of checking down to Caleb Jackson on the screen play and letting him turn it upfield. Because, look, he's scary to tackle. It's a 6-foot, 235-pound monster with the ball in his hand. You do not want to get in his way. So I know the rushing attack is where a lot of people are going to be talking about kind of getting that rolling early. But to me, it's just getting the running backs involved early as a whole, whether it's Josh Williams in the pass pro or Caleb Jackson on some checkdowns in the flat.
Zach, I think one of the things Herb brought up in our first hour was about Aaron Anderson and his use. You see the extended role with him, also Xavion Thomas, in these little quick bubble screens, and if you're going to use the jet sweep. I want to see the development of a number two receiver now. That guy probably won't play today, and that's Chris. He won't play today, and Chris Hilton. But C.J. Daniels, they got to get him the football and more involved in the game. And because of the elbow injury against USC, we didn't see a lot of Kyle Parker when he expected to play today. I think the development of a number two guy has to be there. The one thing I give Kyron, he's taking the challenge of being the number one guy, and he's doing his job. Now, somebody else got to be able to help out at that wide receiver position.
Yeah, for sure. Kyron's lived up to kind of the hype so far this year. He's been fantastic through 2 weeks. And like you said, now it's about kind of developing that second guy. And with Chris Hilton out once again, all focus shifts to C.J. Daniels. We've seen Xavion Thomas and Aaron Anderson become Swiss Army knives for this team. They've been fantastic in the short game, intermediate game. But when it comes to a guy like C.J. Daniels, he can kind of unlock a whole different element for this offense, whether it's short, intermediate, or the deep ball. He's a physical receiver who has tremendous tools to go up and get the football. So C.J. Daniels is obviously going to be a guy that you try to keep tabs on here, but Mason Taylor's really provided that kind of second pass catcher spot. He's been fantastic in the short game. His hands have been phenomenal. He's getting down and dirty. He's doing really everything you want. But when it comes to that wide receiver two slot, it's all about C.J. Daniels here. And it's a step up in competition from where he was at last year at Liberty. Now he's entering SEC play against a South Carolina team who has a fiery defense. It's kind of up to him to step up here and provide Garrett Nussmeier with a second receiver who can become consistent like Kyron Lacy has through 2 weeks. So you kind of hit it right there. That's a guy who has all the attention circled to him to become that second receiver.
How would you grade out what we've seen from DJ Chester at center? A lot of times, this is just my opinion, other than in the quarterback spot, I think it's the hardest position to play. I don't care if you're a freshman, redshirt, freshman, whatever. Because not only do you have to know what you're doing, but you got to understand who the four other guys you making the calls and adjustments to. And most importantly, you better make damn sure that snap is correct on every snap. I mean, it's not, 50% of the time. It's 100 out of 100 times you got to make the snap right. Looking over it in DJ, I think he's had some good moments. He's also been at times a little bit shaky. In the run blocking game, where I thought that would be his strength. I thought he'd be a much stronger run blocker at the point of attack. So your thoughts on what you've seen from DJ Chester, who played some a little bit last year, but really now he's the anchor up front. He's the man in the middle and making those adjustment calls. And I think you're going to see a lot of delay blitzes come from South Carolina today right up the chute.
Yeah, the center position is kind of the position that makes the engine go on the offensive line. And DJ Chester has done a fantastic job so far. Obviously, there's going to be hiccups here and there just because you're returning four out of your five starters on the offensive line from a season ago, DJ Chester being that new guy up front. So there's always going to be a couple hurdles, a couple hiccups here and there. And we've certainly seen that in the run game so far. But from a pass protection perspective, he's been fantastic,
as has
the entire offensive line. But for me, it's all about kind of just diversifying the playbook and allowing that rushing attack to evolve. And it's going to start with a guy like DJ Chester up front, picking up defenses and kind of passing that on to the other guys. So I'm excited to see what he can do to step up and allow the offense to diversify that playbook, get a little bit more creative. Obviously it starts with the big guys up front in the trenches, and DJ Chester is going to play a big part there. But through 2 weeks, I've been impressed. It's just all about continuing to hit his stride and evolve as the weeks go on here in the 2024 season.
One of the things, Zach, you brought up to us when we had you on Sports Talk was the development of the young safeties and Deshaun Spears and Colin Jackson and Jordan Allen. And Jordan won't play today from all indications. But you see now Colin Jackson and Deshaun Spears having a much bigger impact and a quicker impact. And Jaden Gilbert, who came in with a lot of fanfare from Texas A&M, he hasn't maybe so far lived up to the billing of coming in as that big-time recruit that could solidify your safety position. It's been the young kids that's been the talk of the safety spot.
Yeah, no doubt. Jordan Gilbert was a guy who a lot of people would have circled as an immediate impact guy, a player who would come in and step up for this team so far on the defense. And like you alluded to, we haven't quite seen that so far. We didn't see him get significant snaps last week. He was underwhelming in week one against USC. So, it's kind of been about the youngsters. And for me, it's about Deshaun Spears. This is a guy who, when we spoke on Sports Talk, I was kind of just eager to talk about. He's a hard hitter. He's electric. He's long. He's lanky. He's the prototypical LSU DB. And he's really stepping up to the plate so far as a true freshman. Obviously, we can talk about Colin Jackson because he's a guy who's been fantastic as a redshirt freshman. But for me, when I'm looking at the youngsters right now, it's all about Deshaun Spears. I think he's going to take on a really big role today, obviously with Jordan Allen out today. But you're going to see a lot of guys rotate in. You're going to see four cornerbacks, four safeties. But specifically at the safety position that we're talking about, it's going to be Deshaun Spears, Colin Jackson, Jordan Gilbert, and Sage Ryan. Those are guys that are going to be making an impact here. And I'm excited to see how they kind of work with it. Throw in Major Burns as well, who's going to drop back at the safety. You have a lot of guys who can come in and do a by-committee approach. take 20 to 30 snaps, 15 to 20 snaps each, and work from there. But I'm excited to see what Deshaun Spears can do today, Mike. I really think that he can step up to the plate in a big-time SEC game and continue to carve out a big-time role in his first season with LSU.
Zach, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. Go get you a cup of coffee and a little breakfast, and we appreciate your time and insights. Thank you, Zach.
I appreciate it, you guys. You have a good one.
All righty. That's a wrap on our Tiger Scout Notebook, brought to you by Thibodaux Regional Health System, focused on the patient. Thibodaux Regional does a great job in the community here. We'll be back to finish it off here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. We're back here on our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show. We're finishing up. We'll throw it to the LSU pregame network crew, and Mike Dettelia along with Herb Tyler finishing up our Gulf Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgating Show, and we'll be back on at 4 o'clock this afternoon for our Purple and Gold Point After Show from Acme Oyster House in Baton Rouge. Herb, I'll throw it to you, and give me the keys to victory for LSU today.
You know, it's weird, Mike, but I think the first key to victory is going to be, did Coach Kelly get the attention of the guys? Are the coaches going to be coaching as one? Can they get these guys to become the team that they want them to become? It's an 11 o'clock kickoff. It's away. It's at a big-time stadium against a big-time opponent in South Carolina. And you have to have the guys' attention, and they have to become a team in jail. This is the third game of the season. This is where you become or start to become who you're going to be. All the kinks are out, and here we are. We know what you can do the first two games. So here we go. The second key, I think, to the game is going to be, how do we overcome the injuries that we're sustaining and the people that's going to be out? And that's on offense and defense as well. And it's going to be up to the guys who's going to step in and do whatever they need to do in order to be successful. And that's going to be interesting to see, because they're all kids. They're going to be the young guys that's going to step in and be in a hostile road, away game environment. That's going to be crazy. So, and then the third key is just go out there and play physical and be great. Play LSU football. That's it.
Herb, I'll see you at 4 o'clock, and we'll be at Acme Oyster House, 3535 Perkins Road in Baton Rouge. We'll throw it now to the LSU pregame network crew. And, again, kickoff time 11 o'clock a.m., and you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 and free on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.